Hey, this is Adam Sorensen, politics producer at Time.com. Welcome back to The Call, a weekly conversation with Time's political reporters on what they've been working on and the latest from Washington. Joining me this week is Michael Grunwald.
So, the Senate passed financial reform Thursday. It's headed to the president's desk early next week. You predicted several months ago on this podcast and in writing, I believe, maybe several places, that this just wasn't going to happen. So, as you said, time to eat crow. What happened?
Well, you know, I think my three least favorite words in the English language are "I was wrong," but you know, I was wrong. I hedged myself a lot better than Lehman Brothers did. I always said that this was certainly possible, and I always pointed out that all my sources were saying that this was going to happen. So it wasn't bad reporting. It was, I guess, you know, maybe bad thinking. And I have to say, as long as I'm piling on myself for how wrong I was, the bill is way better than I ever expected it to be. This is a really strong, not perfect, but in many ways excellent bill that, you know, again, against all odds, got better as it sort of wove its way through the sausage factory on Capitol Hill.
Right.
You know, I kind of went with an Occam's razor approach, which is, you know, I said no Republicans have supported this bill before. You know, the Democrats don't have 60 votes. And there were a lot of Democrats who didn't really seem all that fired up about it, even though they were sort of ostensibly supportive. And you saw a lot of noise from the White House and other Democrats who were perfectly happy to just spend the fall bashing the Republicans for letting this die. It just seemed like with a bill this complex that had so many moving parts, that there were just so many ways it could fail, and one very treacherous and I thought, you know, pretty unlikely and time-consuming way to make it pass.
Right. So what did they have to sacrifice to get this passed?
Well, they didn't have to sacrifice much. you know, it turned out that, you know, I think, and here is where I, you know, I'm clearly not as close to the action on Capitol Hill as I should be, or maybe I wouldn't have made this mistake. But my sense is that Susan Collins, the Republican from Maine, was, you know, a very strong player in this. And she actually made the bill a lot stronger. Her real focus was on capital and leverage,
right,
which has also been my focus. I think that's the most important part of, you know, part of financial reform. And actually, Geithner has sort of said the same thing. And so she stood up for that, and that was kind of what brought her on board. They did have to cut some deals with Scott Brown. The main one being to get rid of the tax on big banks, which I think is a shame. It's you know, you want – there's a lot of stuff in this bill, particularly with capital requirements and even with, you know, some allowing regulators to dismantle particularly large banks. But there are a lot of disincentives to size, and I think that's a very good thing, because I'm a believer that the best way to prevent banks from getting – too big to fail is to prevent them from getting too big in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So a tax on big banks is another way, you know, aside from raising the money to make this thing happen, it's a good way to, you know, it's another disincentive to bigness. And Scott Brown got that taken out. He also got a couple of carve-outs from certain regulations for some of his Massachusetts banks. That's not good. But, you know, you have to look at this bill in totality, and there's on the whole, this is a huge improvement on the status quo, which, you know, when you hear some of the complaints about it, you know, you sort of forget that 2 years ago, the status quo produced a financial catastrophe followed by massive bailouts that everybody hates.
Now, you mentioned capital requirements and how Timothy Geithner really said that capital is the key to mitigating risk in the financial sector, and yet there aren't hard requirements in the bill. The administration is in negotiations internationally to get some of these rules put in place. Where does that stand, and how do we go forward with capital requirements from here?
Right. You make an excellent point. I mean, what the administration will tell you is that what this what this legislation will do is set a floor. And it's going to require, you know, some, the language is not precise about where the capital requirements are going to end up. And personally, I think that's not a terrible thing. I mean, you know, are you going to legislate 15-to-1 leverage? It's a tough thing to do. That's the sort of thing that's appropriately decided by regulators. But what it makes clear in the legislation is that these requirements are going to have to be significantly higher. That you're not going to have these financial institutions kind of playing Russian roulette, gambling, making these bets with 30 times the size of the assets that are backing them.
Right.
And that's really important. And I do think, you know, then this gives Geithner something to, because as you said, he's, I remember him saying that, we are going to thwack capital, that's going to give him something to stand on. Like, hey, you know, we're dealing with this back home. Obviously, if just the United States deals with capital requirements, that wouldn't really help much because we have non-U.S. banks here. This has to be something that's done internationally.
Now, going to the politics for a minute, it seems to me that both Democrats and Republicans think that they've come down, or at least say they've come down, on the right side of this. You know, Democrats are saying this is a major deliverable for the midterms. We're protecting consumers. We've ended the evils of Wall Street. Hooray. And Republicans are immediately calling for repeal and calling this, you know, a government overreach. They can't both be right.
I was always skeptical that the Republicans would allow this to happen, because often at the end of the day, they look like losers who are in the tank for Wall Street, no matter what the kind of various specific. That's the big picture takeaway. And Democrats looked like they were sort of standing up for Main Street and were effective doing it. I always thought it was a little crazy for the Democrats to think that it was just as good to have the issue, because, you know, if you've got control of the House and the Senate and, going to the voters and saying like, oh, we would have had financial reform if only the Republicans hadn't blocked this. So it's sort of, you know, it's kind of a weak argument to make. It's just sort of like, well, then why did we vote for you,
right.
If you're not going to do it anyway? So it's, politically, I mean, I think this is great for Obama. You know, it's always sort of, you know, the Democrats are in a rough situation anyway, but he gets to say, look, I did the stimulus, which has created 3 million jobs. You know, unfortunately we lost 8 million, but 3 million to help. You know, I did health care, which, you know, is not very popular, but again, the status quo is not working out. And now I've dealt with I've come up with a response to the biggest financial crisis, you know, in 80 years, and the other team voted for the status quo.
Right.
So especially with some of that consumer protection stuff, which people can't understand, right, like your mortgage, your credit card, and all those hidden fees and ripoffs, I do think that this is a pretty good victory for them, and I'm surprised the Republicans let them have it.
That's funny. Well, I look forward to reading more from you on this, and thanks for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Right. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
For more political news and analysis, head over to time.com/politics. Once again, I'm Adam Sorensen, and this is The Call. Tune in next week.